You're listening to 90.1 FM KZFR, Chico listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. This is Love in the 21st Century with Brian Anthony Phoenix. Love in the 21st Century is a talk show with live call-ins, interviews, and discussions on the philosophical to practical look of love. From romantic relationships to connections with humanity, one-third dating insights, one-third self-love guide, one-third compassion training. Stay tuned. It's coming up soon. This is Brian Anthony Phoenix. You're listening to Love in the 21st Century on KZFR 90.1 FM. And that is a juicy track. Thank you, Justin, for... Thank you. That was suggested to me by a friend named Justin out there in the ethers. I'm very glad that he had requested that song for me to play at the beginning of this show. So now we are here with a special guest. His name is Jack Donner. He is a local writer, blogger, and soul adventurer, as I like to say. Hey, Jack, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Doing awesome. Let's keep. All right. Let's hear that again. How are you doing?
I'm doing awesome.
Awesome. There we go. Your voice sounds so groovy through the interview mic. That's so great.
Right on.
I like it. All right.
I was worried I'd sound absolutely awful on the radio.
it's not the case. I sound groovy. And so at any time, by the way, folks, if you'd like to call in and join the conversation with any questions, I'm going to go ahead and throw out the number now. If you'd like to call in and compliment Jack here on his awesome speaking voice or his writing or anything else, or you'd like to chat with us, the number is 895-1114. That's a 530 area code. So yeah, so thanks for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. It's really I've had an opportunity to hang out in some awesome places and do some great things with you, and so I'm really excited to have you on the show.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Nice. So we are, we're basically kind of going with the theme with this show of exploring the kind of milestones of coming to awakenings of love within the self, and then, within relationship and the world at large, and how that's shaped your creative process. And I think that's a really interesting thing for people to grasp onto and hear other people's journeys, because the creative process is such an important process for us human beings, but a lot of us are out of that because there's all kinds of becauses, but I'd love to just have you maybe start with explaining a little bit about your initial processes into creativity when you were younger, And then maybe some things that kind of made that not be so prolific or prevalent as you kind of got older, and then some things that helped break that back open in context of your self-relationship and relationships around you.
Yeah, totally. So part of my initial creative process is really remixing to an extent, like finding something that I like here and then finding something I like over there and seeing how I can marry those two ideas together.
Nice.
And also, like, an author or artist might have a really cool idea that I like, and then trying to see how much further down the rabbit hole you can go with that. And so that has led me to some issues of going, like, where's my, like, uniqueness? What makes what I have to say special or different or worth saying, even? And one of the things that helped me overcome that is actually in a blog post that I have up on my site, where I had this like crazy dream where I met this feathered serpent. And he just showed up in the middle of the dream and was like, hey, you're not creative at all. And at the time, I thought of myself as super creative. And then the serpent was like, well, you just remix things. You put things together in new and interesting ways, but you're not actually making anything new. And I let that sink in for a second, and the serpent asked me if I was okay with that. And I was like, yeah, I think so. I can put my own spin on ideas, and I think there's value in that. And then the snake was like, good. Then there will be inspiration everywhere as long as you keep your eyes open. And I feel like the message from that that really resonated with me is, don't worry about being unique. Just worry about, as far as the ideas go, worry about saying things in your own way, because you have who you are and your experience that's already unique and different from everyone else. So saying the like same idea as someone else through your own lens is valuable in its own way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's great. I think that's a really wonderful story that you just shared, because I identify with that as, you know, being a musician, because there's a musician in town. He runs the he was running the late great Hasbeen's open mic, which is now trying to find a new home. But he also does the open mic, and that is Anne Casamajor. Yeah, so she and Judy have been doing the open mic there for a while, and Anne has a really awesome song called "There's No Such Thing as Original Music," and it's really I love it, because it's a real simple but yet poignant song, and I think that's really it's actually really inspiring to musicians to kind of and anybody really in that creative process to realize that we are really in a lot of ways just kind of spinning what's already there, this kind of fabric of reality that's already kind of set up for us, and we're just like, okay, try to look at it like this, and just taking those and just giving a different perspective.
Yeah, totally. I think that once you drop the need to be unique or new or different, and you can just get in touch with your truth and who you are and express that, that's when the magic really happens. Because you can force yourself to do something that's really avant-garde and new and never been done before, but there might be like no heart and soul in it.
Right. Totally.
Yeah.
So in your experience, when you so what would you say led up? Because there was probably some work that you undertook in terms of maybe self-work, spiritual work, or whatever that might look like before you had that dream, right? Some things that probably led up to you having that dream, some things that, like, where you kind of were opening up certain channels and some things. Maybe if you could speak a little bit to that.
Yeah, actually, just that day before I had the dream, I did this self-guided meditation where I just sat down, followed my breath, and got really still. And I envisioned this light in my head that symbolized everything that I knew, all of my patterns, every thought that I could think from my own experience. And I saw that that light was like maybe the size of a cantaloupe, if I'm being generous. And there's this whole infinite universe out there of ideas that would never even occur to me that are so far outside of my normal patterns. And so I envisioned sending energy up into that sphere and trying to expand it, or at least send little shadows out into like the aether, more or less. Mm-hmm. So that even though there were things that were still outside of my current thought patterns, maybe I could shine a little bit of light on them. And then that night I had that really crazy dream.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome. So perhaps you could speak a little bit about your inspiration now. So you talked a little bit about what you like to do, putting those two things together. Is there a particular does there tend to be a particular catalyst that really gets you fired up to then, you know, make this synthesis of observations into some kind of creative piece? Is it just kind of anything and everything, or is there usually a particular kind of emotion or, you know, feeling behind that?
Any place where there's friction in my life is where the creativity and the art sort of happens. Mm-hmm. If I'm happy and content, like, I don't make anything except for maybe dinner. It's when there's that friction, either just like the hunger before you get something, or like that loss after something's been taken from you or you're feeling pain. For me, that's when the inspiration comes. Mm. And so the piece that I'm starting on now, I have like 3 novel ideas, 2 of which are half written, but just keep getting stuffed in the trunk. But the one that's really grabbing me right now is actually totally like mythological in structure. And what draws me to that project is writing personal truths and things in a symbolic way. Because I think that through symbolism, you can really connect to a deeper level of the psyche than you can with a lot of other methods of storytelling.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice. So in that respect, what would you say your experience is? So does it seem to you, and I'm kind of asking you because this is something that feels like it's been my process too, in the sense that a lot of the music that I've created has definitely been out of moments of crunchiness and friction's a good word. Do you find there's a certain kind of self-illumination that happens when you turn that into a creative project, where you kind of are able to read it and see the beauty and kind of gain a little bit more insight and maybe even more love for whatever that situation was, whether it was more love for you or more love for whatever that was that happened?
Yeah, absolutely. With a lot of those things, like, life kind of hands you this bucket of like darkness, and you can either sit with that and be unhappy, or you can feel that pain or whatever discomfort or friction and sort of transmute that into something beautiful by making art. And I think that's what a lot of artists do. Rumi really captures that well in his poetry about the hollow flute. If you're familiar with that at all.
I'm not super familiar with, the only Rumi knowledge I have is Facebook memes, which is sad because I really am down to get intimate with Rumi. I've been kind of geeking out on another actually Sufi poet named Hafiz.
Oh, nice.
Anyways, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he just talks about how like it's the hollowness of the reed that makes the music. Mm. If it wasn't hollow, it wouldn't be a flute, right? And so, and he also talks about how, like, you know, it's through our wounds where the light enters us. Mm. And so a lot of the times, if you don't have those moments of friction and whatnot, you have no reason to look inside of yourself. You have no reason to make something. And so I use a lot of those moments as like my catalyst, whether that's to change myself or to write.
Hmm. Wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. How would you say that your experience with relationship has shaped that process? And feel free to either be as specific or non-specific as you like, either with past or recent endeavors.
I brought a poem that I wrote that's pretty on topic for this.
Nice.
If you're into it.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Please do.
All right. Camry, like a cool splash of whiskey, on a wound otherwise unknown, with stinging accuracy alerting me to my malady, burning my scrapes, purging my cuts, speeding my recovery. Thanks. And that was inspired by this really tumultuous and screwed up relationship I had probably like 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's when I wrote it. I thought that I was like fine emotionally, but I was really just this emotionally closed off person who dealt with all my emotions by ignoring them and stuffing them in a box. And then I started dating this girl and, well, dating.
Mm-hmm. With quotations.
With quotations. And she really exposed to me how like emotionally constipated that I was. Mm-hmm. And there was a point in our relationship where I cried for probably like the first time in like a decade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it sucked. It burned. But it showed me all these ways where I just wasn't a functional person.
Mm. Isn't it interesting how those seemingly disjunct relationships can have a pretty strong sense of illumination if we see it that way?
Yeah, like I think that we kind of have those flash in the pan romances like that where they're really passionate and quick, but they show you so many things about yourself in just like, you know, a 3 to 6 month span. Mm. And so I think that there's a lot that can be said for the beauty of like a short, intense relationship like that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're out there, and you've just got through one of those, you know, I've always found, or I don't want to say I shouldn't speak in absolutes like that because it's definitely not the case. I would say that recently I've found upon reflection of my particular relationship journey, has basically been mostly flash pan scenarios. Which is why when we get into talking more about relationships as like a singular topic for these shows, I'm definitely going to be inviting in more experts on the topic. That being said, I really like what you just said, because I think there are a lot of people out there that can identify with that particular process of relationship. And especially if we're still going through our own like understandings, awakenings, or even if we're still caught in our kind of insanities of not realizing that we're not emotionally available and kind of like blaming the world for it. It's like those end up being those experiences we get to draw upon and be like, oh, that's why I had this experience in that relationship. That's why this thing happened afterwards, because I was kind of broken open and actually had an opportunity to be put back together with a little bit more gold, as they do in Japan.
Yeah, that's actually some insight that I've gotten recently is I would have a lot of those just flash in the pan relationships where I would go in knowing that they were going to fail because I had this just underlying fear of abandonment. Mm. But if I already knew what was going to happen, like I could just sort of like brace myself ahead of time, not like, you know, bet my whole hand. And so it was just like this just like crappy way to cover up that internal fear by taking control of this thing that I was afraid of and like ensuring that it would happen, but in a way that wasn't scary, because it's not like I fully invested in this relationship and let my guard down and then just had the rug pulled out from under me.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Absolutely, it does.
Yeah.
How do you feel like your perception and intention, or I should say, you know, what's on your radar at the moment in terms of that kind of exploring relationship? Do you feel like you've gone through enough of a process where you feel like getting into a deeper, more exposed, like can't hide in your own little corners type of relationship?
Yeah, I'm like never drawn to like the easy ones. I always do the relationships that like pull up all your garbage. So that's totally what's on the agenda next. I'm trying to like relax on that subconscious like building a relationship that's doomed to fail thing, and just sort of be like relaxed about it. Because the other side of that, like fear of abandonment and everything, manifesting in these short-term relationships where there was that sort of like controlled destruction, is there was a lot of like idealizing certain women, being like, okay, if I get with that girl, then that like covers up all of my insecurity and abandonment issues and I'm good, and having all this like future projection where it's like, that's the one, I'm going to marry that girl, which totally comes from my religious upbringing. And so I'm trying to like move forward as far as relationships go in a way that I'm not sort of forecasting any kind of future, just really being present in the moment. And I think in that way, you don't really have to worry about the abandonment. That's a later issue. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about there being some huge future and putting a ton of pressure on a relationship because you're worried about this future you're going to have together.
Yeah.
You're just being there in the moment together. And I think that that's definitely what I'm after.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, like, in my experience, my most healthy relationship I've been in over the last several years was actually a fairly short-lived one, and it totally came out of nowhere. And as a result, kind of, I mean, for the most part, had to kind of just live in the moment, because she was actually just she was just traveling through California, and we ended up dating and exploring California for about 3 months, you know, before she went back to Canada. And of course, there was all this stuff of getting wrapped up, of course, in each other, as you do in a relationship. And then that kind of unwinding of like, okay, is this going to be a thing long term, or is this? And there were thoughts that came up during that. But at the same time, the nature of that particular experience kind of just forced me to just be in the moment, because it was like, okay, I have limited time with this person. So what, you know, what am I going to do? Like, spend it. It was interesting, and I'm really find myself really thankful for that, because it's set a tone for future relationships for me, in the sense that like I have kind of a high bar in the sense that, you know, I'm looking for that feeling and that ability for me, especially, to be able to just be like, you know, this might be the last day I spend with this person, just like it might be the last day I spend, you know, just on this planet, kind of mentality. Because that was really what I think enlivened that experience, because it was just like when I'd get into my own like emotional kind of crunchiness because I'd be triggered by something, it's like I would sit there and be like, what am I doing? I'm not, you know, like this, the same old kind of like emotional, you know, crybabyism that I'm going through, and like recognizing that, holding it, and then being like, I don't have that much time with this person, so why am I going to be like mad right now, or you know. So it's just interesting as a reflection that just that the fact that it was meant to be a short-term thing, you know, and it forced me to look at it differently. So now I'm kind of, I have that perspective now when I go into it, and hopefully that kind of, you know, keeps me in that present moment.
And yeah, I think that's something that you'd want to bring into any long-term relationship, because your time is limited. Even if you're with that person the rest of your life, your life is limited.
Right.
Your free time to spend with that person is limited. Unless you're like a lottery winner and you've got nothing to do except like garden and like be in love and that sort of stuff, then yeah, you've got like 40 hours a week that you have to work. You need your me time. You got to sleep. You got to eat. A lot of those things you're not going to want to do with your partner. You're going to want some time to yourself so that you can actually feel rested when you're around other people. So like if you're in a semi-serious relationship, you've got like 5, maybe 5, 10 hours with that person a week.
Right.
And so you want to be able to like drop in and be super present and like actually be in the room together when you're in a room together.
Yeah.
Not like checking your phones, updating your Instagram, all that crap, but like actually being together.
Word.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good insight. So I'd like to go back to a little bit more about your creative process. Do you have any other poems? Did you like to share any of the writings that you brought with us?
That is all that I brought with me.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about your blog and about, yeah, just you can drop that. We're going to have you drop the web address at the end again, but maybe just tell us the web address and
yeah, it's,
tell us a little bit about that process of writing there.
It's theunremarkable.co, and it started out with me just wanting to write about my own life because I am, like most people, my own favorite topic and think that I'm infinitely interesting. And so that's how it started out. And I got the name Unremarkable because I had this weird pain show up about where my liver's located in my rib cage. And I was freaking out because I was a hardcore alcoholic. Like, you could count on one hand the number of nights in a year I was sober.
Mm.
And so I went to a doctor and I just was like waiting for test results for like my liver panel, my x-rays and everything. My cell phone battery's down to like 10% and I'm just like waiting for this call. And the doctor tells me that my liver is entirely unremarkable, which is medically a good thing. And in the back of my head, I'm like, what do you mean unremarkable? Do you know how much work this liver does? It's a super liver.
Yeah, totally.
And so that's where I got the idea for the name of the blog. And I put up a blog post about that. And I'm really glad that I did, because that is kind of something I can always go back to now for how much I've grown and changed as a person. 'Cause since then, I have given up drinking most recreational drugs, went to the Amazon and drank ayahuasca and had a really life-changing experience with that.
Mm-hmm.
And without alcohol covering up a lot of my wounds and everything, I've really been diving in deep to figure out like what hurts, why it hurts, and what I can learn from that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely becoming part of my creative process too, is finding where you have that just sort of like almost like chaotic feeling inside of yourself, and like going in there and trying to unwind it and be like, okay, why do I feel this way?
Yeah.
And what can I learn from that?
Hmm. Wonderful. Well, we're here with Jack Donner, and that's is it The Unremarkable?
Yeah, theunremarkable.co.
.co. And we're going to play our promo for the hour for a few minutes, and we will be right back with y'all. You're listening to KZFR 90.1 FM, and this is Love in the 21st Century here with Brian Anthony Phoenix and Jack Donner. We'll be right back.
90.1 KZFR presents an evening of comedy and political craziness with Will Durst and Mary Standish at the Chico Women's Club.
Everybody says to me, oh man, Durst, Trump must be a gift from comedy heaven. Well, yeah, but no, because how do you parody a parody?
From San Francisco, it's Will Durst at the Chico Women's Club, Friday, August 11th, with local heroes, funny folks, Mary Standish. Doors at 7, show at 8 o'clock. You can get tickets at Chico Paper Company in downtown Chico, online at kzfr.org, and at Blazin' J's in Chico. Will Durst with Mary Standish, coming Friday, August 11th, to the Chico Women's Club. It's a KZFR benefit. Tickets also available at Music Connection in Chico.
All right, you're back here with Love in the 21st Century on 90.1 FM KZFR, Chico listener-supported community radio. You're here with Brian Anthony Phoenix, and I have a special guest, Jack Donner, who is a writer, blogger, and soul adventurer. Now, I gave you that last title. I'm hoping that works for you.
I dig it. I feel like it's accurate.
Okay.
I can't think of any other nomenclature I'd use to describe that activity.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I could say like spiritual dude or, you know, whatever. But I felt like that was good. And, you know, you had talked a little bit about your medicine journey in Peru a little bit earlier. And I'm wondering if you might actually like to talk a little bit more about that in the sense of what your experience was in insights in the realm of self-dialogue, self-love, and also maybe love with, like, connection with, you know, everything else.
Yeah, that's something that I've been thinking about a lot. A lot of people get the idea that you go down to the Amazon, you drink this cool psychedelic jungle tea, the shaman sings a couple of songs, you puke, and then all your problems are taken care of. Absolutely false. You get all this great insight into yourself. You can release a lot of pent-up emotion and trauma and things, but then you come home and the work starts.
Mm.
And so the third night of my ceremonies, I got a lot of insight into sort of the patterns that created me and like my different intimacy issues and just like problems with like love and relationships. And so like having that insight and knowledge is one thing, but then working through that and doing something to change those patterns once you're aware of them is totally different.
Yeah. Putting it into action.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like how I was thinking about it the other day is like you go on these adventures, you get all this huge insight, and that's sort of like a brick that you got right there. But without your daily practices and what you do at home, which is like the mortar, you're never going to build anything. You're just going to have a pile of bricks. You need something to keep them together, right?
Totally. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I appreciate you speaking to that because, you know, that is becoming more prevalent in our day and age. And I know, I mean, we're going to be talking about that every once in a while on the show just because it's something that is coming to the forefront of ways that people can explore and help to mitigate and, you know, certain ailments that they might have, and also ways to just explore one's self and open up spiritually. That being said, you know, there's a lot of that. There's a decent amount of that mentality when we hear about things like that, is that it might be that kind of that cure all, you know, or something that kind of does the work for you type of thing. And that definitely is not the case when it comes to plant medicines or, you know, any other psychedelic medicines that are out there. And I think it's important when, you know, we have someone who's had experience with that to talk a little bit about that so that people can hear. That being said, in my experience, is that it's definitely a very wonderful and beautiful way, you know, with some work. It does take some work both within the experience and then afterwards. That being said, it provides definitely a catalyst for for some things to move.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a huge advocate for plant medicine and not just like ayahuasca and things you do in the jungle. I think that cannabis has a lot of potential that people dismiss because you think about cannabis, you think about like stoner comedies, rap, mm-hmm. getting high in middle school, not mm-hmm. like deep spiritual adventures mm-hmm. and those sorts of things, which mm-hmm. is totally unfair to that plant. If you look at the history of cannabis, going all the way back to India, it's intricately linked with like Shiva and different Shaivist sects that are really deep into like Tantra and other things and use cannabis to go deeper into themselves rather than to check out or just for amusement.
Right. Used with intention.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. So I'd like to ask you a little bit more about that, the work that's then continued after your experience in Peru. So what kind of things have you been doing to help continue that work and that exploration?
Yeah. So my basic process is how I think about it is like, say you have a broken bone and it heals wrong. Mm-hmm. You, after that, have all of your muscles and ligaments that build up these patterns based around having an improperly healed bone. So I went down to the Amazon and I had that bone broken again. And so that it's been in a cast so it could heal properly. And now I'm kind of going through like emotional rehab to get those muscles, which are like my beliefs, my actions, all those things working in proper alignment.
Mm.
And so it's painful at times, like looking at ways, especially where in the past I've let myself down. Mm. And then instead of like exacerbating that problem and getting angry with myself for all the ways that I didn't show up for myself in the past, like having compassion and using like self-love to like go deeper into those experiences from the past and release them and let them go.
Mm.
So I think that when you're going through like a healing journey, you see how much of your own pain was self-inflicted. And so you have to learn to forgive yourself for that, without shaming yourself, without being angry at yourself for what you did, and just letting it go because you didn't know better. Mm. Chances are there's some part of you that thought it was acting in your best interest, and so you kind of have to release whatever those things are.
Absolutely. I think that's a great thing that you just mentioned, and really, really, really important in that journey to, I mean, in any journey that allows us to be a more effective human being, whatever you want to call that, you know, you don't necessarily have to call it a spiritual journey, but maybe just a journey of, you know, enlivening and enriching your life, you know, becoming more joyful, becoming more, you know, at peace, more serenity, whatever that is. It's really important to come to those reflections and resolutions. In my experience, I definitely held on to a lot of resentment against myself about things that I had done as a not so great human being and not treated myself well. And, you know, there's more and more science coming out that basically that backs this up. But, you know, the esoteric, ancient esoteric traditions have known for quite some time that when you carry around guilt, shame, resentment, remorse, anger, you know, all these kinds of things, especially directed at yourself, I mean, you're basically just constantly on it, like basically daily you're drinking poison.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely something I can relate to. In like the time period in my life where I was a hardcore alcoholic, I was doing that to cover up a lot of insecurity and feelings of just lack of worth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in sales and I was just like crushing it, one of the best people on my team.
Totally.
And yet I would never stop to go like, I'm good at my job, or give myself a pat on the back. I would just see all the ways that I was still bad. And even when I was like number one on my team that month, I was still worried that they'd like find these little mistakes that I made or places where I was being lazy and just get fired, because I had this internal script of just insecurity and unworthiness. So totally. My mind just found all the evidence it could to back that up.
Yeah, I totally relate with that. So what you were talking about earlier is really important in terms of, you know, when we start exploring that, to be able to have compassion for realizing that at any point, like there's not really a point to be mad at ourselves ever, because technically everything that we've ever done, even if we just did it, was in the past, and that was like a past version of yourself, you know? So, I mean, yes, the more fresh thing can be like, okay, an opportunity to check in. If I do something that's, you know, against my own integrity, and maybe potentially can harm someone else, like that's definitely a place to like stop and take stock and take accountability immediately and be like, okay, you know, I'd like to not do that because I want to be a better human. That being said, you know, especially with the stuff in the past, it's like we all have acted out of our own programming that largely has been given to us.
Yeah, that's the programming being given to us is something that I saw intimately while I was in the jungle drinking ayahuasca. I saw basically monkeys climbing around in trees, falling down, you know, evolving into apes, and those evolving into humans, and that line slowly evolving into my parents, and just seeing that, like, all these people that raised me and people that raised the people that raised me and the people that raised them,
mm-hmm,
never broke patterns that they picked up from when like, we evolved from apes. Like, we still have this crappy behavior that we've just always been like, well, that's how you raise kids. That's how you do things.
Yep.
That we've never taken the time to stop and go like, hey, is this actually a good way to be a parent? Is this actually the role model that I want to be?
Mm-hmm.
We just have these reactionary patterns that we get stuck in and we pass on to our children. Mm. And a really powerful thing in that was forgiving my parents, because like, I had a lot of issues with them growing up that I've been letting go of recently. And the forgiveness for them came in that, like, they weren't trying to, like, be bad parents. They just didn't know any better.
Right.
And they were doing the best they could.
Absolutely.
And so that helps me to forgive. And then also to go, like, if I'm ever a father, I'm actually going to take the time to be, like, what's going on with my kid? What do they actually need to grow as a human being?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's a problem with parenting. Like, I'm not a parent, so take this with a grain of salt. Is people start treating their children like kids, not like future adults.
Right.
And so, like, you ingrain a lot of just bad childish behavior in them, and they think that's just how life is.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that being true in myself anyways.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, I totally agree with you, and I am not a parent as well. I think we can honor and respect parents for being in this situation. Like, my best spiritual brother friend is, we talk all the time, and he's got twins and also, I don't know, he's like 3-year-old twins and maybe like an 18-month-year-old toddler, and so, like, he's like crazy, you know, in that. And that being said, you know, like, when we have discussions about that, about the parenting, I mean, he has bad days, and sometimes he's not parenting the way that he, like, would like to. That being said, he also brings awareness into what he's intending on allowing these little ones to, you know, be to explore within the means that, you know, they can. And bring out their, you know, their personal qualities, the qualities that they were born with, and, like, recognizing that. And I think that's a big, like, turning point with the incoming generations, is to, like, realize that, like, okay, domestication, as Don Miguel Ruiz puts it, is, you know, it's an important part of our, what we call the collective dream, right? I mean, it's just part of what we do. That being said, like, there's hardcore domestication, you know, where we're basically just being like, okay, like, my parents did it this way, and so that must be right, so I'm going to then do it the same way. Or there's creating the space, the container that's safe, and that is, you know, that still teaches the children about 3D laws, you know, so they're not breaking things or themselves and, you know, that kind of thing, and getting hurt. And then also bringing forth that, like, the intrinsic qualities that they, I mean, they're really coming through. Like, when you see that, like, I've lived with a friend who had two little boys, and it was just like seeing their personality, like, that just was them, like, and seeing, you know, where the kind of the programming of, like, I want to raise my children in a particular way kind of butted heads with the kid's, like, own personality being a little bit different than that, you know? And I don't think there's an easy answer by any means, but I think that's what you just said is just kind of an interesting, like, check-in point, that where we are able to maybe start bringing it with our new generations into this awareness that, oh, these kids are actually coming pretty well equipped with a decent amount of their own, like, uniqueness.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely. And, like, coming from a religious background, a lot of the things that kind of messed me up as a kid, for my mother anyways, were, like, her wanting me to fit into this box of what she thought I should be based on our Mormon faith, like, go on a mission, have a bunch of kids right away, be, like, this perfect, like, from their viewpoint, pure person.
Mm-hmm.
And at no point was it that, like, there's, like, being seen for who I actually was as a kid. It was just, like, who they wanted me to be, and then the ways that I wasn't stacking up to that, you know? And getting insight on that as an adult is something that's kind of interesting for how I look at, like, meeting people now is... Mm-hmm. how often do I meet someone and like I just make a snap judgment based on their appearance rather than meeting them for who they actually are?
Yep.
And so I'm trying to actually just move in and like see people for who they are, meet them on that level rather than my perception of who they are, mm-hmm. which isn't really based in reality. It's just based on one of your senses, sight, you know?
Yeah, totally. That's a hard one, you know, with those judgments. I wanted to actually circle back real quick just about the thing that you talked about, you know, forgiving the parents. I think this is a really beautiful reflection and a really important thing, I think, I in medicine space have also seen that lineage, right? And I actually was listening to a talk by someone who was facilitating a medicine ceremony who was talking about, you know, like the Genghis Khan, for example, right? And just the fact that that one man is actually responsible for millions of people on this earth right now.
Totally.
And just like, I just got this flash of like, whoa, like, okay, one person, you know, like if that one person wasn't here, like this world would, or was killed like early on in his conquest, this whole world would be way different. And then having that kind of flash of consciousness of seeing that lineage, you know, that past, that what you're talking about, just passed down and passed down and passed down, and realizing that the incredible power that we have as an individual have to break those cycles. Like we have potentially, you know, depending on what we've been giving, we potentially as an individual, when we become aware of this, have a potential to break like cycles of patterns of, you know, interacting that could be thousands of years old that are associated with pain or destruction or, you know, things of self-worth, like all that kind of stuff. And that's like, when I had that realization, I mean, that's huge. You know, and it might sound daunting, but it's not, it's more, for me, it was like more empowering. It's like, oh, like I have the choice to say, no, I'm not passing that. I'm not continuing that on.
Yeah, I think that you actually have to go even a step beyond that. Mm-hmm. Because if you just go like, I'm not going to have that behavior.
Right.
Then you're still being reactionary to that behavior. Mm-hmm. And you're still letting it control you. The example that I like best for this is actually alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I see this story passed around how you have an alcoholic father with two sons. One son becomes an alcoholic. The other one's entirely sober because they watched their father and they learned from his mistakes of alcoholism and either repeated them or were like, no, I'm never going to do that. The son who decided to be sober, good for him, but he didn't decide to have a healthy relationship with alcohol and make his own choices.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that a lot of the times when we're learning from previous generations, we swing entirely the other way and we're like, oh, I'm not going to do what they did, instead of going like, what was the wisdom in their action?
Mm.
And how can I be better and still not make their mistakes, learn from their mistakes, and sort of transcend that back and forth yo-yo?
Because
I think that like that's the cycle things get into a lot. Like you have like an alcoholic kid, then they have a sober kid, then out of rebellion, the grandkid decides to drink because their father never drank. And so you never actually transcend the cycle.
Right.
And so I think it's about looking at your patterns and finding why you did them,
mm-hmm.
and moving forward from there, not just being super reactionary, but being conscious.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was one more piece I was going to say about that too, that to wrap that point up, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I think that is very important. Back with that forgiveness piece with the parents, you know, I did a really powerful meditation that was facilitated by a guided meditation that Thich Nhat Hanh, super awesome. He is, I believe, Zen, well, I don't know if he actually he is a Buddhist monk, and he has his kind of own flavor and teachings around that philosophy and that way of living. And he did this guided meditation that was where you basically imagine your parents or parents, like whatever one that you want to sit with, you imagine them as a child. And then you imagine yourself as a child, and you just like sit with them in this space, and then forgive them at that point. Like, if forgive them at that point for everything that they're, you know, as a child was passed on to them that they then passed on to you, you know? And that was super powerful. It was a really powerful meditation, really powerful way to just like look at each other as equals, not as adults, but just like, you know, both as children who are just, you know, wanting to just do their thing as children do and live life and be expressive and loving. And yet, you know, this, you know, all this programming was then kind of brought into their life. And so anyways, I felt like that was a really wonderful way for me to come to that resolution of like, oh, I don't want that behavior. It was more like, oh, like I see where it came from. And, you know, I just hope that I can take what's been given and make it a little bit better for the next generation.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's, like, how you do service to that is being better and then passing that on to the next generation, you know?
Mm.
And that's how you sort of transmute your own, you know, personal, whatever your issues are, into something that's of value, at the very least to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But also hopefully to other people too.
Absolutely. So we have a few more minutes left. Let's go ahead and give yourself a plug again. So is there any other ways, other than your blog, that people can kind of support you in your writing endeavors right now? Or is there anything coming down the pipeline that you'd like to let people know about? Or is that the best place for people to just go and check out what you got going on at the moment?
That's the best place for sure. I've been a bit sporadic on updating it, just with like integrating my plant medicine experiences and everything. It can be hard to write about something while you're still like integrating it.
Absolutely.
and so I want to get more into that, and I should have a pretty good post coming up soon about my thoughts on shower thoughts.
Right on.
Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, I did want to say, you know, so the website again is theunremarkable.co.
Yeah, and I'm also on Facebook as just The Unremarkable.
Nice.
Like, you can do Facebook/The Unremarkable, and that should pull me up.
Awesome. There's a really awesome blog that you posted called, is it In the Hall of the Spider Queen?
Yeah, In the Hall of the Spider Queen. It was about a shamanic journey that we went on where I met this spider who taught me a lot about how spiders do things and also a little bit about love.
I love that piece. And I mean, it's near and dear to my heart because I happen to be the one who is drumming for that for that particular journey. So that was really, really special. And it was great that you posted that. So definitely check that out. So with a couple more minutes left, actually, is there any other, are there any practices, anything that you are working with currently that you, or books, literature, anything in that realm that you suggest to people to check out?
I'm actually starting today an information diet. I'm limiting what I take in. I feel like I've read enough things. I spend so much time like doing pre-search is what I call about it, like researching things before I actually do things.
Right.
But I'm just cutting that out, and I want to get down to actually doing the work. So instead of reading about things, I want to sit down and meditate. I want to go on shamanic journeys. I want to have experiential learning.
Mm.
And I feel like that builds your own personal resonance or resonating point where you know it's true for you. And once you have that experiential feeling of what your truth is, anything that you read after that is going to resonate with you better where it's supposed to. And that helps to build your own discernment. So I'm just trying to cut out any extra reading that's not like specifically for researching a problem that I'm having right now.
Absolutely. Okay. Wonderful. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I totally resonate with you, actually. It's funny that you mentioned that. I just was listening to the audiobook, The 4-Hour Work Week, and he talks about going on a low information diet. And I totally realize I've been super guilty of that recently. Like, I basically have just been filling my entire, like, space with, like, podcasts and audiobooks and just like information, and realizing like, oh, I'm not really doing much with this information except filling my head, which, you know, there's worse things to fill your head with in regards to the content that I'm listening to. That being said, there's time to actually take action. And I think that's an important thing that she just said, was the meditation and dropping into that process.
I get this like false sense when I research things that I'm actually making progress. It's like, don't get me wrong, I love knowledge, I love learning, I love reading, but there's a certain point where like you've read enough, you know enough, and you need to start walking the walk. And then, you know, once you've started doing that, maybe start reading again.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for being here, Jack. We really appreciate it. Again, it's theunremarkable.co or Facebook/theunremarkable. And we're going to get a little underwriting done here, and then we're going to go out to a song. And this was suggested by you. So this is Silk. You want to tell us a little bit about this, about the song, why you like it?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it has a really sweet melody to it. Mm-hmm. It sounds great, but it kind of goes back to that theme that I was talking about of transmuting your personal darkness. The artist sings about spinning sorrow into silk.
Nice.
And so, yeah.
Wonderful.
I dig it.
So you're listening to 90.1 FM KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley and the foothills and beyond. This is Love in the 21st Century. And Love in the 21st Century is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Chico News and Review, providing Northern California with news, commentary, and entertainment. The Chico News and Review is available for free every Thursday at over 600 locations throughout Butte, Glen, and Tehama counties. It can also be found online at newsreview.com. Thank you all for joining us this evening. We've got Ecotopia coming up next in just a few minutes, so stay tuned, and we'll see you next week.